and welcome to the ACR Bulletin Podcast, the show where we cover the latest trends affecting radiology. I'm your host, Chris Hobson, and today I'm joined by Kevin J. Chang, MD. Dr. Chang is Chief of Abdominal Imaging and Director of MRI at Boston Medical Center. In addition, he is Associate Professor of Radiology at the Boston University Chobanian and Avedisian School of Medicine. Dr. Chang, it's a pleasure speaking with you today.
Pleasure to be invited. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, in honor of Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, which occurs every March, today we'll be discussing the importance of screening for colorectal cancer. I know you've had at least one personal encounter with colorectal cancer screening in the past, which I hope we can get into in a few minutes here. But first, I was hoping you could please provide us with some background information about yourself, such as your main interest areas and where you practice.
All right. I've been an abdominal imaging specialist my entire career. I first started I did my residency at Boston Medical Center at Boston University back in the day. And that was when I was first exposed to virtual colonoscopy under the days of Joe Ferrucci and Jorge Soto and Matt Barish. So Boston Medical Center was very involved early on in the development of virtual colonoscopy. And so that's when I first got my taste of colorectal cancer screening, and then went on to pick up some of those skills during my fellowship, as well as became the chief advocate in my first practice coming out of fellowship at Brown University, Rhode Island Medical Imaging. So I had a chance to develop the service line there and build up the service line and garner the referrals and build up a relatively busy practice there before I ended up moving on to other locations for further practices, where I set up and built up the same referral practice and service line at Newton Wellesley Hospital before finally landing at Boston Medical Center again, back home where I trained initially, and joined the practice here 3 years ago, and I've been a big advocate here as well.
Excellent. So you have quite the history with this. So I'm so glad that and grateful that you gave us that background. And now that we know you a little bit better, I was hoping we could turn to the subject of cancer, since it's very relevant this time of the year. So according to the American Cancer Society, I was just doing a little bit of research here. Colorectal cancer is the third most common cancer diagnosed in both men and women in the United States. And just to throw out a few numbers, and we'll link to this in the show notes, so people can kind of go over it at their leisure. But the ACSMS estimates that in 2024, there'll be about 106,590 or so new cases of colon cancer in the U.S. That's about roughly 54,000 in men and about 52,300 in women, and about 46,000 new cases of rectal cancer. And that breaks down as roughly 27,000 men, almost 19,000 in women. So with that kind of as a context, I was wondering if you could kind of please help give us a better understanding of where the guidance now stands on screening and any maybe new developments that have happened over the course of the last year or so.
Okay. So for any average risk individual, somebody without a family history or a personal history of polyps, for the average American, the recommendation currently from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, as well as the American Cancer Society and the ACR and all the other big societies out there, is to start screening now at the age of 45. And that was a big change that was changed just a couple years back, from 50 down to 45. The options currently are two large categories of different tests that are being recommended. Those are the structural or the direct visualization tests, ones that are looking for not just cancers, but polyps, precancerous polyps, and then stool-based tests, which are primarily designed to look for either blood or immunochemicals or DNA being shed by cancers in the stool. And so that's more of a cancer detection rather than a polyp detection kind of a test. So the two big categories differ in terms of what their targets are. The direct visualization tests are more proven to be a preventative kind of a test. So not only are they there to detect cancer, but they're also there to prevent cancer from developing in the first place from the precancerous polyps. And those two tests are optical colonoscopy, which has always been the old standby, what the gastroenterologists have long considered the gold standard for screening. And then the other test that also picks up polyps in particular is CT colonography, also known as virtual colonoscopy. So while that doesn't quite involve the possibility of a polypectomy like a colonoscopy can, it's definitely a what's proven to be an equally efficacious test in the detection of polyps. And then those that meet the criteria in terms of size of polyps and number of polyps, we send on to colonoscopic polypectomy. And so in that sense, that test could potentially screen a large number of patients while only sending a small subset on to the more invasive colonoscopy for a polypectomy. The stool-based tests, they're not quite as effective at picking up cancer or polyps, but they certainly are better than not screening at all. So that's the reason why they are on the list, because any screening test is better than no screening test at all. And in the end, you have to choose the test that's right for you, for your lifestyle, for your level of convenience, for the amount of time that you're able to take away from work, and the amount of potential inconvenience to family and friends that might need to drive you to and from certain tests. You know, it's a balance of all these factors that allow you and your primary care provider to pick the test that's right for you. They all have shown a survival benefit in terms of decreasing the rate of colon cancer.
Thank you for running through all of those varieties of tests. Actually, that's going to be a question that we'll get into here in a minute, is maybe who benefits from those tests specifically, which you've already given us a little bit of insight into. I was first just hoping to kind of stay a little bit zoomed out and talk to you a little bit about, I've had other experts on this program talking about this very issue, and what always seems to come up is access to care issues, and there, you have a really interesting scenario you went through that I think kind of points to this in one sense. So, you know, sometimes people that find it challenging to get screened for this condition, and again, this will come up when we talk about the variety of tests. But before that, can you please update us on which procedures are covered under Medicare and Medicaid? Because I know some people in our audience deal with this. And there are some ways that they private insurance differs from public government-sponsored insurance on this matter.
Right. So the two big payer groups that you have to take into account in terms of the reimbursability of tests are those that fall under centers of Medicare and Medicaid, the CMS ones, Medicare and Medicaid, versus the private insurers. And the Affordable Care Act that came out a few years ago actually mandated that any test that the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force had recommended with a grade of A or B for cancer screening should be covered without copay by private payers. So anybody that's under the age of 65, anybody with a private payer, employee sponsored health insurance, all the screening options, including CT colonography, should be covered for screening purposes. There's some lack of equitability, I guess, there when you think about Medicare and Medicaid. So they haven't yet moved to cover CT colonography as a screening test, except if they've already failed a colonoscopy or have a contraindication to colonoscopy. So in that sense, we've been working for a long time as the ACR, as well as other groups, to try to advocate for equal reimbursement for screening CT colonography in that population. But basically, the other tests, at least the major stool-based tests, fecal culpa testing, immunochemical testing, you know, the FIT test, as well as optical colonoscopies, are covered for screening purposes by all insurers. But there are, you know, there are some other small differences in terms of what is covered, what costs are covered, and what are not, because they may cover what's called a screening test, but as soon as that screening test becomes diagnostic, or you know, involves a polypectomy, a procedure, or involves pathology charges, you know, there's other charges that are variably covered or not covered by certain
Interesting.
insurers. So there's some hidden costs, which I think a New York Times article came out within the last year or two about the hidden costs of screening, particularly for colonoscopy. So some thoughts to keep in mind in
Yeah, it's
terms of
really
picking the
valuable
best.
to somehow keep all this in your mind as you're going into the doctor. But
Right.
there's such a and you know the research I'm seeing, again, I'm looking at American Cancer Society, but there does seem to be a bit of a divergence with the rates that at which people are being diagnosed. So it seems like The overall rate has actually gone down since the mid 80s, and a lot of that's attributed to healthier lifestyles and people getting screened. But actually, and actually between 2011 and 2019, I'm seeing that it dropped about 1% per year. But the downward trend is mostly an older adult. So even though maybe there's a lot of barriers to being covered if they happen to be on government-sponsored healthcare plan insurers, actually people who are younger than 55, their rates of colon cancer, of colorectal cancer have been actually increasing by 1 to 2% a year since the mid 90s. So it's one thing to look at the overall stats is going down and people maybe getting complacent. But what would you say to somebody maybe who's even younger? Like, what would your advice be?
Yeah, if you think about that, and you think about what the screening age was when these statistics came out, you can see it re-emphasizes the fact that screening has been a huge factor in reducing the incidence and the death rate of colorectal cancer. And in the population that's not getting screening, the ones that used to be under 50 and now those that are under 45, those are the patients that have not benefited from colorectal cancer screening, and those are the ones that are experiencing an increasing incidence of colorectal cancer. So definitely screening plays a huge role in reducing the incidence and the impact of colon cancer. But in addition, there's other factors at play in terms of something in the environment, something in the diet. People are still trying to figure out which of these factors, and they may be multifactorial, that is responsible for the steadily increasing rate of early onset colon cancer. But there's definitely a colon cancer is starting to affect younger and younger patients at a higher and higher rate.
Also, Dr. Chang, for early onset colorectal cancer, I believe there's another statistic that you had mentioned that you wanted to mention here.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about how quickly rising the incidence was of colorectal cancer in those under 50. The incidence has been rising to the point where last year they were estimating that it was going to be the number one cancer killer amongst those under 50 by 2030. And now I just found that it is already the number one cancer killer in males under 50 and the number two cancer killer in females under 50. So it's definitely a cancer on the rise in the youth.
All right. Well, everybody who's in that age bracket who's listening, you have to go out, please, and schedule your appointment. Well, yeah, and just kind of on that same topic, because maybe it's more presenting more of a challenge to get younger people in to get these tests. There's been a proliferation of tests. You already touched on some of them, and you put them in two broad categories. You talk fecal occult blood tests. There's also sigmoidoscopy, colonoscopy, which you talked about, virtual colonoscopy, DNA stool. You've talked about most of these already. So they have varying levels of effectiveness, as you've already acknowledged, and are kind of like suited for different situations, is what I've kind of is the conclusion I've sort of come to. So I didn't know if just generally you could talk a little bit about the differences between who might benefit from each of these tests. What kind of life situation? And again, you've alluded to it, but I thought maybe you could spell it out a little bit more.
Okay, sure. So I think the direct visualization tests are the best test, the best two tests, the best two options for somebody that has the time to take from work and in terms of arranging transportation. Anybody that can actually spare the time to do it should get those tests over the others if they can. But of course, both of those options will involve bowel preparation, so you have to think about who can tolerate a bowel prep, and who can, there's no bowel preps involved in stool-based testing, so you have to think about the bowel prep itself, which many people, once who've gotten either of the tests, realize usually it's the bowel prep that's the more difficult part of the test than the actual procedure itself, whether it's the colonoscopy or the CT scan. So you have to be able to tolerate the bowel prep, and there's a bunch of different preps out there, so you can choose one that works for you, and then some are definitely more tolerable than others. But usually, at least takes the you know you're usually on an on a fluid only diet at least 24 hours ahead of the procedure, plus the prep, which would begin mid afternoon, late afternoon, early evening, the night before the exam. In terms of colonoscopy, most colonoscopies in the US are performed with some kind of anesthesia or conscious sedation. So that usually takes somebody out for a whole business day from work because they have to recover from the exam. And then they also have to find a driver to take them home from the exam. So you're
Right.
potentially inconveniencing
That's
one other
tricky
person
sometimes.
and taking them out of the workforce for one day. So there's definitely some economic impacts that are not reflected in our usual analyses of the costs of a colonoscopy. Whereas for CT colonography, usually there's no conscious sedation involved. So as soon as the exam is done, usually we use carbon dioxide for insufflation, and that gets resolved very quickly. So people are completely back to normal health status before they even leave the department. And you could potentially get the scan and go straight to work. So there's less time involved away from work there. And usually you don't need a driver if there's no conscious sedation involved. So those two tests are, that's what's involved with the structural tests. Whereas for the stool-based tests, basically these kits get mailed to you at home and you can test yourself, whether it's, fecal occult blood testing is generally a more of an instantaneous kind of a test. So this is the one that's used in the doctor's offices and in the ERs for anybody with blood per rectum, just looking for blood in the stool. But that's generally kind of the lowest efficacy in terms of screening. It's just designed to pick up blood and that's it. The FIT tests are the ones that are getting a lot more popular these days, especially with the backlog of appointments for colonoscopies. The gastroenterologists are not able to keep up with the demand right now for colonoscopy screening
Interesting.
exams. And this has been the case at multiple health centers that I've practiced at. There are long backlogs,
Wow.
and scheduling an outpatient screening exam may be months to even, in some instances, a year off. So there
Wow.
are big wait lists for this.
So don't wait.
And
Get your appointment now.
exactly,
Is
you have to
that the
schedule it way
message?
in advance, and you're not going to be. I wouldn't. It'd be difficult to try to schedule an exam like that to follow up a specific complaint.
Yeah.
Or they may be able to have to squeeze you in sooner for a more of a diagnostic colonoscopy. But there are long backlogs for these, and you have to plan well in advance.
For sure.
And they are having trouble keeping up, or even finding enough time slots to meet this demand. Because there are only so many gastroenterologists and there are only so many endoscopy suites and sedation nurses, so they are having trouble accommodating all comers. So in that case, for a lot of these patients, and this has been the case at Boston Medical Center since COVID started, especially, they've been proactively mailing out FIT tests to as
Okay.
many patients as possible just to get them screened. Because the endoscopy suites were shut down for a long time during COVID, and
Yeah.
then they ramped back up slowly, and
And the cause of
they
backlog.
realize even now with the endoscopy suites totally open and running at full schedule, they can't catch up.
Wow.
So they're
That's
using
really
FIT tests
interesting.
to
I
fill the
hadn't heard
gaps.
that. Huh.
These FIT
Well,
tests are filling the gaps, and they're easy. You basically poop into a cup and mail it in. That's
yeah,
basically exactly what you're
right.
doing.
Simple as that, right? Well, as I mentioned earlier, Dr. Chang, I understand that you had a personal encounter with an imaging test for colorectal cancer a few years ago. So I was wondering if you wouldn't mind maybe please tell us about it. And what I find particularly interesting about it is, how thorough you were, but also how, as a doctor, maybe you had a level of access to care that maybe a lot of people don't have. And so maybe you could also kind of tell us a little bit about how that played out and maybe some ways like the average person might be able to, kind of navigate that.
So I turned 45 about 4 years ago or so, and I knew that the screening age was going to drop to 45. I think that I made this decision even before they officially dropped the age, because I had a family history of colon
Okay.
cancer. So I had two first and second degree relatives that had gotten colon cancer and passed away from colon cancer. So I knew that I probably qualified for screening before the age of 50. So at 45, I was at Newton Wellesley Hospital at the time. And as kind of a parting gift before I left there to come to Boston Medical Center, I decided that I would be my own take basically partake of my own service and do a
Right.
CT colonography on myself. So I did. And on the table when I was getting scanned, I saw that there was a mass in my or next to my right colon. So I knew right on the table as I was getting insufflated and getting and flipping over before for the two positions for the virtual colonoscopy, I already knew that the test was positive for something, for some kind of a mass. So I looked at my own scan right after it was done, and it looked like a large mass kind of protruding through the ileocecal valve from the terminal ileum. Thankfully, I had warned a gastroenterologist friend of mine at the hospital that I was getting this scan, and that if there was something positive, that I wanted to see if I could arrange the colonoscopy to directly follow, because it wouldn't require another bowel prep. So the
Right.
convenience of having a same day CT colonography and optical colonoscopy is that you can use the same bowel prep. You don't have to re-prep for the other exam. So I was already ready to go to colonoscopy if I needed to. And I think I also warned my wife just in case there was that I had to go to colonoscopy, that she might need to come and pick me up. So I had all the future steps lined up. And I know that's a perfect scenario in somebody with better than average access to healthcare, but it is the kind of a scenario that you would love to set up for your patients if you are a high volume practice at screening a lot of patients. Because the fact of the matter is that the reverse is currently true for most institutions that do CT colonography. So right now, CT colonography is a go-to test for gastroenterologists that are unable to complete the colonoscopy. So if they have an incomplete colonoscopy, they already know that they can call up the Department of Radiology and add that same patient on for a CT colonography to look at the part of the colon that that the endoscope couldn't reach. The parts of the colon that the endoscope can't or have more trouble reaching are actually the easiest parts of the colon for us to see, because they're the easiest to inflate and the most capacious part of the bowel to assess by CT. So we're already available for same day add-ons for incomplete colonoscopy patients. The flip side should be true eventually, but it does involve some flexibility on gastroenterology's part to be able to accommodate add-on patients that radiology adds to their schedule. And thankfully, I was able to arrange that for myself, but optimally we'd like to do this for all patients that get CTC. And this is the case at some institutions, like at University of Wisconsin, who has a much busier practice than most in the country. They do set aside time slots for specific days of the week where they are doing batches of virtual colonoscopies. And they ask their gastroenterologists to at least reserve one possible slot open on the same day in case they do send a patient on to get a completion optical colonoscopic polypectomy. So some institutions have it arranged that way. And
Interesting.
that's an aim that I'd love to shoot for if I can get my GI colleagues to be flexible enough to do that.
It sounds like all a lot of people can do right now is just get the people through the door and get, you know, it sounds like once maybe the backlog is a little more easy for me to say, but once the backlog maybe is worked through, maybe that'll take years to happen. Maybe only then will we have the bandwidth to be able to rearrange the workflow. I don't know. Maybe that's
Yeah,
part of it.
it's also a demand on radiologists, because we have to be able to read the exam in real time to make that decision the same day, with enough time to send a patient on to fit an endoscopy slot. So that's a big ask in some radiologists' workflows currently, because these CT colonography exams are not always the most timely, efficient studies to read. And in my practice, maybe I'm maybe the only one of two radiologists that are actively reading them still. So
I see.
there's definitely some demands to make that a possibility, to make that whole workflow work.
Interesting. Well, I guess, on the patient side, if we looked at it from, and you were the patient, so I'm including you in this. Say that maybe, you didn't have that access to care that you had. If you can put yourself in that mindset, where would an average person's journey begin? Now, with their primary care doctor, and their primary care doctor refers them. That was actually the case with me. I went through this last year, as a matter of fact. But I don't know that everyone has a primary care doctor, which they don't. We know that actually a lot of people don't have primary care doctors. So maybe, different people with different scenarios, where's a good starting point?
The starting point for most people is their primary care doctor. If for those that don't have one, they should get one. But I believe if you call up any gastroenterology office, they should be able to arrange the screening tests for you. Optimally, the primary care provider ends up being the one that usually steers the patient towards the test that they both agree on. Is the test that's right for them. And the one single message that most PCPs and GI docs and radiologists agree on is that basically the best test is the test that gets done. It doesn't matter exactly which one you pick as long as you pick one, because you're going to extend the benefit from being screened for colorectal cancer at some point at the prescribed interval as well. So, some tests need to be repeated every year, some every other year or every 3 years. CTCs every 5 years is the current recommendation. And then colonoscopies every 10 years if you have a negative colonoscopy. So, I would start with the PCP and figure out the test that's right for you. Many of the primary care physicians are not aware of virtual colonoscopy as one of those screening tests. They're aware of the stool tests and they're aware of the colonoscopies, but many, if not maybe most, don't even think about CT colonography as an option, unfortunately. So for that, I would just urge patients that are aware of it, and some of these efforts on our part is to try to get patients to be aware of this option, to bring this option to your primary care provider and educate them about the availability of this test, because most larger radiology practices are offering it as a screening test, and all you need is a referral to get it scheduled. If you're looking for a practice that performs virtual colonoscopies, like you said, one of these resources is the CT colonography locator that the ACR runs now. So, if you go to the ACR.
ACR network.
ACR.org/myCTC.
I believe that's right. We'll put the actual URL in the show notes so people can just click it. But I
Or
believe
you can
that's
just
correct.
Google it as well. It's very easy to find. But the CT colonography locator tool run by the ACR will have an up-to-date list of all the locations near you. You just punch in your address and say what the radius of distance that you're willing to drive is, and it'll list all the imaging centers that perform that test, perform the CT colonography to you, and you can arrange that test yourself, or
Thank you very
ask your
much for
PCP
pointing
to
that
refer
out.
you to them.
That is a great resource, and there's other great resources too. Just there's a website, radiologyinfo.org. ACR, in addition to the MyCT colonography location finder that you mentioned, they also have all kinds of colon cancer resources, all aggregated on one page, which we'll put a link to in the show notes. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Cheng, for joining us today on this most important issue. And I wondered if anyone would like to continue this conversation, if they can reach out to you online, perhaps.
Sure. I have a Twitter profile. I know some people call it X, but I still call it Twitter. It's at K Chang, KCHANG is my handle at Twitter. You can find me on LinkedIn as well.
Excellent. All right. And for our listeners, if you have any ideas for future show topics, please let us know on Twitter, X, whatever we're calling it these days, at the handle at RadiologyACR. And please include hashtag ACR Bulletin Podcast in your tweet. And I also invite our audience to check out all of our past episodes at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts. And please be sure to subscribe to ACR's YouTube channel to stay up to date on our latest episodes. And finally, please do hit that like button on this video if you found it valuable. Well, thanks again, Dr. Cheng, and we really appreciate it. And hopefully, you'll come back and update us on this very important procedure in the future.
All right. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Absolutely. And thanks to our listeners. This has been the ACR Bulletin Podcast. See you next time.